welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Westerns coming up in this hour, popular ones at the time as well. Later on, we'll hear Have Gun, Will Travel from 1958. But right now, a syndicated episode of Frontier Town called Varmint Valley. This was released for air in 1949.
Frontier Town, the saga of the Roaring West. Frontier Town. El Paso, Cheyenne, Calgary, Tombstone. Frontier Town. Here is the adventurous story of the early West, the tamed and the untamed. From the Pecos to Powder River, Dodge City to Poker Flat, these are the towns they fought to live in and lived to fight for. Teeming crucibles of pioneer freedom. Frontier Town!
You know, when you're a cowtown lawyer like Chad Remington, that's me, there are several things you gotta know, and the least of them is law. The most of them is trouble. It was only a few weeks ago that I had a letter from Colonel Winfield, an old friend of my father's who'd settled 100 or so miles away from my hometown in a place known as Varmint Valley. Colonel Winfield wrote that he needed help, needed it bad. And to quote the old gentleman, the kind of help he needed might be legal, but probably otherwise. Well, it took Cherokee O'Bannon and myself about a day to get ready and pack up, and another few days to ride up to Varmint Valley. And it was while Cherokee and I were on the trail that Colonel Winfield's trouble first came to a head. Early one morning, the colonel and his daughter Georgia were paid a call by the colonel's oldest friend and next-door neighbor, Henry Trowbridge.
Colonel, if you just shut that trap of yours...
Shut my trap,
to...
eh? I got a good mind to shut yours for you, Henry Trowbridge, so you won't be able to use it for a month of Sunday.
Daddy! Now, that's no way to talk to Mr. Trowbridge.
You keep out of this, Georgia. I'll talk to him or anyone else just the way I want it. And there's no one walking the face of this earth who's going to make me sell my ranch if I don't want it.
Well, you've been trying to sell your ranch for years. But now, just because someone wants to pay a decent price for both our places, you gotta go and act as if I were trying to euchre you out of something.
Hogwash. When I've taken all the hogwash from you, I'm going to take.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah, that's so. And if you know what's good for you, Trowbridge, you'll clear out of here.
Father, how can you talk that way to your oldest friend?
He's no friend of mine anymore, Georgia.
Who wants to be a friend of yours anyhow? Trying to talk me into selling my ranch just because you want to sell yours.
All right, I'm through talking, but I'll promise you one thing, you bull-headed old gopher. You're going to regret what you're doing. Regret it mighty soon.
Daddy, I'm just... Well, all I can say is that I'm just thoroughly ashamed of you.
Yeah, it's too blessed bad. And so you don't get contaminated staying in the same room with me. Go out and find that shiftless foreman of ours and tell him I want to see him.
Root? What do you want to see Root for?
Because I want Root to start rounding up the cattle. Henry Trowbridge or not, I'm driving my herd to market so I don't have to stay around here and listen to all that caterwauling about selling our ranches.
But what about Chad Remington? I thought you wrote him to come up here.
Well, what about Chad? He'll get here when he gets here. And if we're gone, maybe he can take the few days to find out what's going on behind the scenes.
Well, fortunately, Cherokee and I got to the colonel's place before he had a chance to trail his herd to market. And between the colonel, Georgia, and Root, the ranch foreman, we finally dragged out the story of what had been going on.
That's about all I can tell you, Chad. This cattle broker, Big John Biggers, claims he represents some packing house that wants to buy both Henry Trowbridge's ranch and mine. And I know blame well the price they're offering for my ranch alone. It's so gall-blamed high, it just can't be honest.
Pardon my intrusion, Colonel Winfield, but haven't you heard the old expression about not looking a gift horse to teeth, especially if the teeth are solid gold?
There's another old expression you ought to learn, Cherokee. The one about all is not gold that glistens.
Chad, the awful thing about this whole business is the fact that it's breaking up a 40-year friendship between Mr. Trowbridge and my father.
Yeah, I can imagine, since Trowbridge is insisting that he wants to sell.
Well, why doesn't this packing house buy Trowbridge's place and let it go with that?
For the life of me, I don't understand. Big John just keeps saying his both places are none. Isn't there so, Rube?
Well, I saw Mr. Bigger in town last night and tried to argue with him for all the good it did. But it's just like the boss said, Mr. Remington. Either they sell both ranches together as one piece, or there ain't no deal.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about this thing, Root? Do you think the colonel ought to sell?
At that price, you ought to jump at it. Why, if it was me, they was...
Someone at the front door, Georgia. Go let him in.
Oh, don't bother, Miss Georgia. I'll let him in. Oh, hello, Mr. Trowbridge.
Howdy, Root. Is it all right if I come in?
It's Mr. Trowbridge, Dad. Come on in, Mr. Trowbridge, and meet Chad Remington and Mr. O'Bannon.
How do you do? Colonel, I just couldn't eat my supper after what happened this morning without, coming over and apologizing for losing my temper.
Well, that's a mighty nice thing for you to do, Mr. Trowbridge. The Colonel and Georgia were just telling us about the little set-to you had this morning.
Well, Colonel, we've been old friends too long to be old fools now. Put her there.
Oh, doggone it, Henry. If there's any apologizing to do, I'm going to do it.
Now, don't go starting another fight about who's going to apologize to whom.
Come on, Mr. Trowbridge. Pull up a chair and sit down. You see, the colonel asked me up here thinking perhaps I could help untangle this little mystery. And since both ranches are involved, well, I'm mighty glad you dropped in at the time you did.
Thanks. Remington, you see, well, to be perfectly honest, I've been pretty hard-pressed for money lately.
And... Money? Why didn't you come over and ask me for what you needed?
Well, Colonel, I just couldn't do that. 5 years ago, when Emma was so sick, just before she passed on, the doctor and ran so high, I mortgaged my place to the bank. The loan's been past due 3 months now, and they're readying to close me out.
Why in thunder didn't you come and tell me, you old Billy Goat?
I didn't need to when Big John come along with that offer. You see, that's why I was so set on making the deal. But, well, it's all right, Colonel. I'm not going to try to force you into it. And, well, I feel better for having told you the truth.
Well, how much do you owe that Consound Bank?
Well, a little more than 4,000, but...
Trouble with you, Henry, and always has been. You're as stubborn as a Missouri mule. Georgia, hand me my glasses.
What are you up to anyhow, Colonel?
I'm opening the safe and giving Henry the money he needs to pay off the bank. That's what
No, Colonel. I won't take it.
Well,
no.
Dickens, you won't. And if you say one word about thanking me, I will run you out of here.
Yeah, but...
Now, here it is. Just the way I got it from the bank. 4 bundles of bills, each $1,000.
Dad, drat it.
Go on, dry up. You'll start blubbering like a kid in a minute.
Yeah, but it's probably all the money you got.
Well, let you know. There's still another 4,000 odd right there in the safe. And if you know what's good for you, you get out of here and go on home.
Well, I see you tomorrow.
Root, go outside and make sure Mr. Trowbridge finds his horse all right. It's so dark, and with him crying, he may wander around all night.
Well, you bet, Colonel. I think I'll just keep on going down to the bunkhouse. Good night.
Colonel, after that exhibition, I'm surprised we're not all a little bit teary-eyed. If that's the way you treat your friends, I'm proud to be numbered one of them.
Although we haven't met before, Colonel, if you're looking for a friend in need, I'm in need, and I could very quickly become a friend of yours. Does the Colonel keep any drinking liquor around the house, Chad?
Mr. O'Bannon, you seem to forget that I come from the South. And I've got some of the rarest, finest, smoothest...
And you're going to keep it, Colonel. Anything that old and rare and smooth will be so foreign to Cherokee's palate that his tonsils would think he was drinking molasses syrup.
Well, is there anything wrong with molasses syrup?
Certainly not.
Good.
So if you'll follow me out to the kitchen, I'll pour you the biggest glass of molasses syrup a man ever drank. Well, While I coerced the O'Bannon into retiring with only the nightcap you tie around your head, we found out later that Colonel Winfield's foreman, Root, hadn't gone to bed. In fact, he hit his horse and streaked for Big John Bigger's office in town.
Well, that's where I come in, John. Ears over elbows. With Trowbridge having enough money now to pay off the bank, even he's not going to want to sell out to us.
He hasn't paid off the bank yet, has he?
Well, no.
And I are going to be waiting for Mr. Trowbridge and the trail that leads from his place to the bank tomorrow morning.
If you mean gun him down, that's risky business.
This whole thing is risky business. And we got to get both those ranches, or we ain't got no deal with that mining company.
I still don't see why that mining company just don't buy one of the ranches.
Because when they started to check on that vein of silver you stumbled on up at the back end of Winfield's place, they found that half of it was over on Trowbridge's spread.
Yeah, I suppose they know what they're doing. Now that Trowbridge has got that money the colonel's given him, he's never going to sell. Just like the colonel said, he's as stubborn as a mule.
There are two kinds of mules, my friend. Live mules and dead mules. And after Trowbridge leaves his place heading for the bank tomorrow morning, you know the kind of a mule he's going to be, don't you? So you better go home now and get some sleep. When you start shooting tomorrow morning, I want your nerves to be steady.
Life of me, I don't understand why you get up at this ungodly hour in the morning to ride into town.
If I've told you once, I've told you 10 times. I want to get in and have a little talk with that big-hearted cattle broker, Big John Biggers. Try to find out what packing house is local enough to offer twice it.
Billy Blue Blazes, no matter where we go, bullets fly thicker than mosquitoes over a swamp.
Come on, Cherokee, knock on that horse. Those shots came from just ahead of us.
Thunder and lightning, Chad. That's Colonel Winfield's foreman, Root.
I wonder what in blazes he's up to. Oh, rein up. Whoa, boy. Easy.
What the? Oh, it's you, Remington.
Merciful providence, Chad. It's Henry Trowbridge. Shot 4 times through the back.
Poor old cuss.
Root, how come you got here so quick?
Why, Now, look here, Remington. Are you aiming to accuse me of anything?
Where's Trowbridge's money belt?
How in blazes should I know?
I can see where it was ripped off his trousers. And since you got here as fast as you did, you ought to know something about it.
What are you doing now? Calling me a thief?
If I had a mind to call you anything, thief might be just a small part of it.
Yeah, well...
That was a neat bit of pugilistic perfection, Chad. A left to his fat stomach and then a right to his jaw.
All right, Cherokee, come on. Help me get Trowbridge's body to town. There must be a lawman in Varmint Valley. Before we're through, I've got a feeling he's going to need a few dozen 2-gun deputies.
We'll return to the second act of Valley of the Varmints, our exciting frontier town adventure, in just a few moments. And now, Frontier Town.
Well, I guess we all find it out sooner or later. After a thing is over and everything's explained, it seems quite simple how all the little jigsaw pieces fit together to make the picture. But with poor Henry Trowbridge dead, the $4,000 gone, and the bank about to take over his ranch, Cherokee and I, along with the colonel and his daughter, faced what seemed to be an insuperable problem. There appeared to be no answer whatsoever to supply a reason why some unnamed packing house should want both ranches so badly they'd pay a fantastic price. Our visit to the cattle broker, Big John, having been interrupted by the finding of Trowbridge's body, I asked the colonel's foreman, Root, to ride into town and see if Big John wouldn't come out to call on us. And he did, and the conversation was most enlightening.
You can talk all you want, Bigger, but I'm not changing my mind. My ranch is not for sale.
Oh, but surely, Colonel, there must be some price we could agree on that you'd take for your layout.
Oh, I don't mean to butt in, Bigger, but just how high can you go?
Well, I don't know for sure, Remington, but I might be able to induce my clients to raise their bid to, another few $1,000.
And maybe another few $1,000 on top of that, huh?
Yes, it's possible. It's possible.
In other words, your so-called clients want this property at any price.
So-called clients, eh? Just what are you hinting at?
All right, Bigger, here it is. No people in their right minds are offering a ridiculously high price for a couple of ranches like these two just to supposedly raise cattle for a packing house.
In other words, you're just calling me a liar.
I don't need you to put words in my mouth, but since the shoe seems to fit you, let's let it go at that.
Chad, look out!
Thanks, Cherokee, but I saw him go for his gun. If he wants to clear leather, it's all right with me. Well, Big John, figure you're big enough to try it?
Remington, I'd give you a chance at that. But right now, it just don't happen to be convenient.
You mean your insurance policy isn't paid up?
Colonel, that offer I made you was good for 6 more hours. If you change your mind, if you've got a mind, you know where you can find me. In my office. I'll be there until 6 o'clock tonight.
Well, you certainly made him back down.
Sure did my heart good, Chad, to see him get his comeuppance.
That still doesn't explain just why anybody wants to pay the price he offered you for the ranch.
It convinced me of one thing, Cherokee. They don't want this place just to raise cattle. Now, tell me something, Colonel. Are there any mines or ore deposits anyplace around here?
Say, you don't think they found gold up on the ridge at the back end of my place, do you?
Well, I haven't the slightest idea. All I was doing was asking.
You know, you just gave me an idea, Chad. And doggone if I don't think it's worth checking up on.
Daddy! Where are you going?
Never mind about me, Georgia. You stay here and keep our visitors company. Chad Remington isn't the only galoot around these parts who can smoke out trouble.
I tell you, boss, I think Remington's on to what we're trying to pull.
A lot of good it's going to do him, Root. That silver's been back in them hills for a couple of thousand years. No one found it until you just happened to dig a post hole up there.
Yeah, I know. But even if they don't find the silver, what good is that going to do us if we... Hey, look.
Huh?
Here comes the colonel out of the house, and he's heading straight for his horse.
Yeah. I wonder where he can be going all by himself. All right, Root, come on. We're hitting our own horses and trailing Colonel Winfield. I don't know where he's going, but we're sure finding out. Rain up.
Whoa.
You see where Winfield's going?
Yeah. He's heading right for the ridge where we chipped out the rock, and you can see the silver ore.
Yeah.
If he ever spots it, our deal's done for.
Get that rifle of yours out of the saddle boot.
Sure, but
wait till the colonel gets right on the top of the ridge, then we'll cut loose. When they find his body, it'll have rolled on the other side onto Trowbridge's property.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, come on. Line him up in your sights now. All right now. Let him have it.
That's about all there is to it, Marshal. When the colonel didn't come back, we went out looking for him. Found his body down at the bottom of the drawer, loaded with lead.
There's not much chance of proving a case from that, no matter who you suspect. Well, I've got the colonel's will here, and if you wouldn't mind my reading it now, it'll save me a long ride out to the ranch sometime later.
It's all right, Marshal. There's nothing to be gained from putting it off.
Well, it, runs about 4 pages, but when it's all through, it just leaves the ranch to you, Georgia, 50-50 with Chad Remington on an equal basis.
What? Half of it to me? I can't accept that, Georgia.
Well, I'm afraid you'll have to, Chad. Father was afraid something like this would happen. He left you half the ranch to make sure you'd look out for me. Be paid for your trouble.
Well, I think I may accept it. for the time being. If you don't mind, Georgia, let's be heading back for the ranch. I'm mighty curious to see how Root feels when he hears he's got me for his new boss.
Booger! Root! Root, come over here and put the horses away.
Why, sure, miss. Sure.
Oh, Root, it may interest you to know that Colonel Winfield left half this ranch to me, and from now on, I'm giving the orders out here.
Oh, is that so? Well, I still have something to say about the running of this place.
Yeah? Well, I'm one gent who's not going to end up like your father did. I'm selling out and getting out of here.
Well, you can't sell without my signature, and I certainly am not selling.
That's what you think. Now, come on, let's not air our troubles in front of the help around here. You and I are going into the house and do a lot of talking. I'm through wasting my breath on you. You keep the ranch since you want it so bad.
I certainly shall.
But I'm taking what money's left in the safe and clearing out of here.
Why, you're no better than a low-down crook.
That's enough. Now go on. Get that safe open while you're still able.
Chad Remington, you're nothing but a thief. That's what you are. A common, ordinary thief. There. Take the money. Take it and get out.
Just a minute, Remington.
Root.
You're not leaving here yet.
He threw down on me and made me open the safe.
Yeah, I saw the whole thing from outside the window. All right, Remington. I'll take that cash. Hand it over.
Why, sure, I'll be glad to. And if you know what's good for you, young lady, you won't try to follow me.
Mr. Beggar, I don't blame you for not believing me, but what I'm telling you is still the truth. Chad wants to sell you the Winfield Ranch.
That just don't make sense. What's
this maverick doing here?
Well, he's been telling me some cock and bull story about Remington wanting to sell the ranch.
I'm not surprised after what he'd done. Pulled a gun on the gal, made her open the safe, and then lit out with all the money the colonel left in the safe.
What?
Certainly did. He's no fool. And he says if you'll get the girl here after dark tonight, he'll promise both of them will sign.
I'd like to know what Remington's up to.
He's just up to saving his own hide. That Georgia ran screaming to the marshal about Chad taking the money. Now he's wanted for burglary. What he's got to do now is raise enough money so he can hide out for a couple of years.
Crime sure doesn't pay, does it? All right, tell him it's a deal.
Now you're talking. You get the girl and Chad will be here about 10 o'clock tonight.
Something awful funny about this.
What do we care? As soon as the girl and Remington sign the deed, Remington's going to have a little surprise party. Since the marshal's out looking for him, I think it's only my duty as a decent citizen to turn him over to the law.
Everything worked out just fine. I got to Bigger's office at 10 o'clock, and 5 minutes later, Georgia reluctantly signed the deed.
There. But you'll never get away with this, Remington, believe me.
Okay, Remington. Now, you sign it and the deal will be closed.
I'll sign it when I get $5,000 laid in my hand. All cash.
Cash? Well, where do you think I'd get $5,000 at this time of night?
I guess I forgot to tell you that he wanted it in cash.
Well, you better find it, my friend. What's in that cash box of yours there on the desk?
Yeah, I forgot about that. Well, I think I might have most of it in cash. There you are. There's 4,000 of it, bundled up just the way it came from the bank.
Thank you, Bigger. All right, Cherokee. Take this package of bills and compare the serial numbers with the money we took out of the colonel's safe today.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
What the devil are you up to?
Plenty. If the serial numbers on these bills are in sequence with those that were left in the colonel's safe, then this must be the money that was stolen from Henry Trowbridge's body. And we know who and why it was taken.
Chad, you were right. These numbers are all in sequence.
Cherokee, don't let Ruth get away. Georgia, get back. Get out of the way.
Well, now that we've got the proof that they killed Henry Trowbridge, I don't think we'll have too much trouble finding out what made those ranchers valuable enough to risk a double murder charge. Georgia, you better go call the marshal. Cherokee and I will stay here and get these two crooks bundled up.
Don't mind telling you, Chad, that you certainly had me mystified for a while. You and Georgia put on that argument, it certainly sounded like the real thing.
That's one of the nice things about those Southern girls. When they put on an act, they put everything they've got into it.
Always have admired a Southern beauty. Trouble is, none of them ever admired me.
Well, now that Georgia is the sole owner of a fairly prosperous silver mine, you might go back and try setting your cap for her.
You mean marriage?
Whoa. With a girl like Georgia, marriage should be very interesting.
Well, I will admit the young lady has her good points.
Oh, now, you can speak more clearly than that, Cherokee.
Huh? What do you mean?
Well, now, knowing that the Winfields come from your favorite state, Kentucky, what you really meant to say was that you were interested in the young lady because she has her good pints.
Yes, she certainly has her good pints. Now with that silver mine she's got plenty of quartz, too.
Frontier Town, starring Tex Chandler and featuring Wade Crosby, is a Bruce Ells production. Story and direction by Paul Franklin. Music written and played by Ivan Dittmars. Be sure to be with us again same time next week for another fine action-adventure story with your favorite young Western star, Tex Chandler. And now this is Bill Foreman to tell you that Frontier Town comes to you from Hollywood.
Frontier Town. On Tuned to Yesterday, Jeff Chandler, the star in that syndicated broadcast from 1949. You're listening to an hour of Westerns on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now an episode of Have Gun, Will Travel, one of the rare shows to make its appearance on TV first before the radio version, and the same script we'll hear next was used on the TV series a year earlier. It's called No Visitors, and was heard on December 28, 1958 on CBS.
You came to me with a torch and a gun. You call it righteousness. Call it by its right name. Murder. Have Gun, Will Travel. Starring Mr. John Daner as Paladin. San Francisco, 1875, the Carlton Hotel, headquarters of the man called Paladin.
Come in.
Whoa, clean socks, Mr. Paladin.
Hmm?
Clean socks for a trip, very important.
Oh, yes, thank you. Hey, boy, just put them in the bag there.
Yes, sir. Oh, bottle of brandy in bag, too.
It's for the trip. Very important.
Oh, snake bite.
Correct.
Oh, no snakes in Nevada territory this time of year.
Why not?
Too cold. Ah, maybe brandy for other purpose, like drinkies?
Maybe.
Or maybe to give lady named Cleo to make warm?
The lady named Cleo has hired me to do a job, that's all.
Oh, sure.
She wants me to find her husband.
Oh, sure.
And she's paying me very well.
Oh, sure.
Hey, boy. You know what you are?
No, what I are?
Auf den Knödel.
Auf den Knödel?
Yes. Now, carry this down to the lobby for me. I'm ready to leave the comforts of the Carlton Hotel and head for the wilds of Nevada.
Auf den Knödel.
Do you see speed laws and other regulations as restrictive? Or do you look upon them as protective? When a police officer writes a summons for traffic violations, do you see him as an enemy or a friend? Your life may depend on your attitudes. Statistics clearly indicate that where laws are obeyed, deaths go down. It's no secret that emotional immaturity is the major factor in our accident rate. How else but childish can you describe the notion that breaking a traffic regulation is a way of getting away with something? What could be more infantile than believing one can prove his superiority by ignoring a stoplight? Unfortunately, too many drivers on the road subscribe to that kind of emotional outlook. The result is tragic. Almost 85% of all traffic accidents in America are caused by careless, childish driving. We hope you know our traffic laws and the people who enforce them are there to help save your life. The lady named Cleo, whom I had traveled over 1,000 miles to help, turned out to be a fat shrew of 50, and her desperate need of me was to find a husband who had understandably tried to blot out his memory of her with drink. By the time I found him, he'd done pretty well. I figured they deserved each other, so I brought him back, memory and all. But I was left in the middle of the Nevada desert, miles from the railroad. I'd been riding for a full day when I heard a strange sound in the desert stillness. Or at least, a strange sound for that lonesome place. It was a baby's cry. And then I saw the wagon. It sat alone, without horses, forlorn in the sand. No sign of life, except the sound. I dismounted and walked toward the wagon.
Get away from that wagon.
Well, I thought it was deserted.
Move away, mister, while you still can.
Is this all right?
Now get on your horse and ride on.
Are you alone here?
That don't matter.
A woman can't last out here by herself. Where's your man?
Clear out, mister.
What's that you've been digging?
It don't concern you.
Is it a grave? Who's it for?
The baby and me.
Look, I don't know what this is all about, but won't you let me help you?
You can't help us none.
I can try.
You ain't a doctor, are you?
No, I'm not.
Move on, then.
What's wrong with the baby?
Typhoid. Typhoid fever.
Well, maybe I could have...
Hold fast, mister. I'd just as soon shoot you dead as know you got a killing fever from us.
But you just can't stay out here and...
I ain't got the strength to dig another grave.
Has the doctor seen your baby?
No.
Well, then you can't be sure it's typhoid.
Mr. Mulrooney knows.
Who?
Mulrooney, the wagon master. He knows the symptoms.
And he just cut you loose? Left you out here to die?
He said it was either the baby and me or the whole wagon train.
Are they sending help?
What can they do?
Well, there's a settlement less than a day's ride from here. We'll hitch my horse to the wagon
no.
and head out.
They won't let us in. Wagon train's there by now. They'll know about the typhoid. They'll never let us in, not now.
Look, there's fresh water and food in my saddlebag, enough to hold you till I get back.
Where are you going?
To get help.
Mister, you don't have to do this.
Let's just say I want to. Pardon me, ma'am.
Yes?
They said at the store I'd find a doctor at this house.
Yes, that's right.
My name is Paladin. I'd like to speak to the doctor, if I may.
You are, Mr. Paladin.
You're the doctor?
Dr. Phyllis Thackeray.
Oh, how do you do?
Didn't they tell you down at the store?
Well, there were some looks.
I guess people out here haven't got used to the idea of a woman doctor. Most of them won't even believe I am a doctor.
Are you?
My diploma's inside, if you care to look.
Oh, well, no, I'm not the patient.
Who is, then?
A woman and her baby.
What's wrong with them?
The baby might have typhoid fever.
Might have?
Well, I'm not sure.
Where are they?
They're lying in a wagon a day's ride from here.
I see.
It's a long ride.
You'll find my horse in the stable. By the time you have him saddled, I'll be ready to go.
You're quite a woman.
I'm a doctor, Mr. Paladin.
Wait a minute.
Oh. Looks like a delegation, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Just a minute, you two. I got something to say.
Yes, Mr. Davis?
Mister, you didn't tell us those people had typhoid fever.
No, I didn't. Who did?
I did. My name's Jeremiah Mulrooney.
Well, now, Mulrooney, you don't look like a murderer.
Why?
You sentenced that woman and her baby to die when you left them out in the desert.
They're diseased.
You've done nothing to help them?
Look, mister, typhoid's a terrible thing. It's nothing to fool around with. We don't want it here.
He that touches pitch shall be defiled forthwith. You've consorted with the disease. The fever is upon you, too.
So, you'd better make tracks, mister.
Wait. Mr. Davis, he's not even sure it is typhoid.
I'm sure. I saw it.
You're not qualified to say.
And who says she is?
Are you going out there with this man, Mrs. Thackeray?
Well, of course, Mr. Davis. I'm a doctor.
All right, that's up to you. But once you mix with a fever, you're not welcome back here. And don't try bringing those fever patients back here, either.
If we have to bring them back, we will.
Look, we got folks to protect, children of our own. We'll shoot you down if we have to keep them safe.
They mean what they say, Mr. Paladin.
So do I. You ready to go?
I'm ready.
I guess perhaps I wasn't used to the idea of a woman doctor myself, especially one as pretty as Phyllis Thackeray. She rode beside me through the desert, all night, without rest, without complaint. Now it was just after sunrise.
Maybe I should have brought something for saddle sores.
You want to rest?
I want to get to that baby.
Yeah, shouldn't be long now.
Good.
You know, you should be on a velvet settee, wearing a hoop skirt and fluttering your eyelash over a fan.
I tried that. It was too easy.
Is that why you studied medicine? This was hard?
Maybe, something like that.
Wasn't it tough enough practicing back east?
I guess I'm as much missionary as physician. I was the second woman to graduate from my medical school. Others came after me. It was difficult for all of us, but gradually we're becoming accepted as something better than freaks.
You're not accepted yet. You just got run out of town.
Maybe I'm not the missionary I think I am. Or the doctor.
Well, we'll see. Here's the wagon up ahead.
I don't see anybody.
Neither do I. Come on. They're in there, all right. Both sleeping.
I hope that's what it is.
Is there anything I can do?
Just help me up there. And cross your fingers.
Doctor, coffee's ready.
Smells good.
The food will be ready in a minute. Here.
Thanks.
How are they?
Well, the mother's suffering from exhaustion, exposure, nerves, no sleep.
The baby? Typhoid?
Well, maybe. I don't know yet.
Mulrooney knows all the symptoms.
So do I. High fever, red spots, delirium, then a coma that leads to the crisis. The baby has all of them. Still, it could be something else. But whatever it is, I can't do much for her in this wilderness.
You want to take them back to town?
Yes.
You know what that means?
Yes.
It's necessary, medically?
Yes.
I'll hitch the horses to the wagon.
Mr. Paladin.
Hmm?
You don't have to come with me.
I wouldn't miss it. There's something about that Mulrooney's face I didn't like.
Stop that wagon right there. Don't come no farther.
Whoa.
They have guns, Mr. Paladin.
I'm going to try to talk some sense into their heads. Here, hold the reins.
Stand right there. No closer.
Dr. Thackeray has examined the woman and child. The woman has no signs of typhoid.
Her child is diseased.
The doctor isn't sure the baby has typhoid.
I'm sure.
That baby needs treatment. Now, Mr. Davis, you're a sensible man. Are you going to let Mulrooney sentence a woman and child to death?
We'll bring what you need out here. But you ain't bringing them into town.
They'll be completely isolated in the doctor's office.
Paladin, they're sick and we can't take the chance. We've got to protect them.
They're not as sick as you people. Now, you may be able to keep them out of this settlement. But you'll carry your own sickness with you wherever you go. You'll die again every time you see a baby smile.
We've got our own kids to think about.
How do your children cry when they're sick? Any different from that baby? Suppose it was your child crying like that. Would you send it to the desert to die? Now listen to me, all of you. I'm driving that wagon to the doctor's office, and don't you try to stop me. If you need a doctor, you know where she'll be.
We won't let you do it, Paladin. We won't let you bring disease and pestilence into our midst.
I'm afraid they'll use those guns, Mr. Paladin.
Get back there with Mrs. Benson. Both of you lie flat.
You gonna try it?
Go on, get back.
Come on! Hey, come on! Stop him! Shoot! Shoot!
Mr. Paladin, are you all right?
Fine, fine. We're through. I'll have you in your office in another minute.
CBS Radio will score another goal on New Year's Day as most of these same stations bring you our play-by-play broadcasts of the two year-end football classics, the Orange Bowl and Cotton Bowl games. From the Orange Bowl, CBS News sports experts will call the thrills in the Oklahoma-Syracuse contest. Syracuse will be making its second appearance at the Orange Bowl this year with an 8-1 record. Sporting a 9-1 record, Oklahoma will make its fourth appearance. There'll be plenty of excitement at the Cotton Bowl, too, where Texas Christian will be battling it out with the Air Force Academy. The Texans have made it with an 8-2 this year, and the Air Force Academy is the Cinderella team of college football, with 9 wins, no losses, and 1 tie to date. No matter where you go, no matter what else you're doing on New Year's Day, here's CBS Radio's on-the-spot broadcast of the Orange Bowl and Cotton Bowl games.
All through that night, I sat on her porch and kept watch, seeing their torches, hearing the voice of Mulrooney haranguing the townspeople, working them up. But they didn't come. And inside, the doctor worked with her patients. It was after dawn when she came out to me.
Still quiet?
Oh, well. Mulrooney is still working on them like a witch doctor.
There's breakfast inside. You'd better eat something. I'll stand guard for a while.
Thanks. How's Mrs. Benson?
She'll be all right after she gets some rest.
And the baby?
The fever broke last night.
Well, what does that mean?
It isn't typhoid.
Not typhoid? You sure?
Yes.
Well, how can you be certain? You've only been with her overnight.
You still doubt me, don't you, Mr. Paladin?
The symptoms are there.
Symptoms can be ambiguous. Now get your breakfast. You need it.
All right.
Good morning, Mr. Paladin.
Well, Mrs. Benson, it's nice to see you up and around.
I wish I could tell you how much I appreciate it.
Oh, no. No gratitude before breakfast. Baby's better, huh?
Yes, much better.
Miss Benson.
Hmm?
Why does Mulrooney hate you so much?
My husband died early on the trip. After a while, Mulrooney wanted me to marry him. Said it was God's will to care for widows. And he was the chosen messenger. I wouldn't let him near me. Then the baby got
Mr.
sick.
Paladin. Come outside.
What is it?
They're coming. Look.
I'll handle them. Go inside with Mrs. Benson.
No, maybe I can help.
You take care of your patients. You may have some new ones.
I want to stay.
All right, but stand back. That's far enough, Mulrooney.
This torch is the fire of truth and justice, Paladin. Will burn away the seeds that Clara Benson has spread among us. Will scourge the disease from our souls and bodies and purify these homes again.
The only disease is in you, Mulrooney. Mrs. Benson is well, and the baby is out of danger.
Lies! In the very face of judgment.
Mulrooney, I'm giving you 15 seconds to drop that torch and call off those rifles.
The flames of the just will banish this scourge. Let the fires rage in the land of...
You have 10 seconds.
Wait! Listen, all of you! That baby never had typhoid fever.
Don't believe her. I saw the child raging with fever, livid with rash.
That rash was measles. 3-day measles.
You're lying.
3-day measles, Mr. Mulrooney. And you left them to die because of it.
Mrs. Benson, bring the baby out.
No, it's not true. You're trying to humiliate me, to belittle me.
You'll see. All of you. The fever is down. The rash has faded. Her eyes are bright. There, look.
Look at her, Mulrooney. You can kill people with hate, but not with 3-day measles.
Mulrooney, 3-day measles.
Stop. Stop it. You can't laugh at me. Stop. Paladin!
Mulrooney, don't be a fool.
I'm going to kill you, Paladin. I'm going to laugh at your grave.
Let me see.
There's no need. I think he's dead.
You shoot very straight.
Mr. Paladin.
What do you want?
Mr. Paladin, Well, I guess we was wrong to listen to him. He seemed to have so much book learning. But he was just setting us against each other. I'm glad we woke up in time.
Next time, you better wake up a little sooner. Dr. Thackeray, this town hasn't been too good for you. Maybe you'd like to come along with me. They can always use a good doctor in San Francisco.
Oh, please, ma'am. I guess we ain't been very friendly, but we'll make it up to you if you'll forgive us and stay.
Well, Dr. Thackeray?
Thanks, Mr. Paladin, for your offer. But there are too many of those velvet settees in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I'll stay here where I'm needed.
Oh, good afternoon, Mr. Paladin.
Good afternoon, hey boy.
You get in late last night. Sleep all day. Now up and feeling fine?
I do indeed.
Oh, you have good time with Lady Cleo?
Lady Cleo?
Lady yourself for you, you know.
Oh, as a matter of fact, I'd forgotten about her.
Oh, sure.
I met a lady who was much more charming. A lady doctor.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I've had a fine case of 3-day measles.
Oh, yeah, the 3-day measles. Oh, sure.
It's true.
Oh, you got dirty laundry. You put out tonight.
To coin a phrase, hey boy. Oh, sure.
Have Gun, Will Travel. Created by Herb Meadow and Sam Rolfe, is produced and directed by Norman McDonald, and stars John Daner as Paladin, with Ben Wright as Hayboy. Tonight's story was written by Don Brinkley and adapted for radio by John Dunkel. Featured in the cast were Virginia Gregg, Vic Perrin, Gene Bates, and Lou Krugman. Hugh Douglas speaking. Join us again next week for Have Gun, Will Travel.
Have Gun, Will Travel on Tuned to Yesterday from December 28, 1958 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of Westerns on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for listening.